You are listening to a free version of The Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see?
I keep referring to Obama as the magic Negro.
Do you like what you see now?
Well, suck on this.
It's just a mirror, America.
Shared sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect your image?
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS.
And Frontline.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Thursday, January 30th, 2014. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the three-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, Jane and Garofalo. Am I writing that?
Yes, thank you, Samuel. And congratulations on your potty, your podcast award.
Live.
Huzzah!
Live in studio, ladies and gentlemen. Also on the program today, Fast Track running into a speed bump in the Senate, as will Iran sanctions. And those wonderful folks at Freedom Industries in West Virginia.
They're good.
Not only did they dump more chemicals into the Elk River than had been previously reported, turns out formaldehyde may be in the mix.
Did they use another sandbag and cinder block for that, too?
That's right.
So that's two. Two sandbags, two cinder blocks.
They really went the
That'll affect the profit margin.
Full
this is
effort.
Formaldehyde. We need to be a little bit more serious. Another brick.
Meanwhile,
a door jam.
The paranoid delusions of the plutocrats, while kids in Salt Lake City having their lunches thrown away because they haven't paid for them, apparently. The NSA, James Clapper, says that Snowden had co-conspirators, accomplices. Apparently, he's talking about the media. And be still, Janine's heart. The National Review could be facing existential problems in the future. And
that meaning existential meaning of a philosophical nature?
No,
they're
mean,
doubting their existence.
I mean, they may no longer exist.
Oh, okay, that's not. Is that an existential problem? It's just if they were to sit and contemplate it, it would be. But you're saying that they may go under, they may fold.
All this and more, ladies and gentlemen, as Janine
I just here, don't know.
Live in studio.
Existential.
Existential. It has to do with one's existence.
No, I understand that, but they wouldn't be reflective, self-reflective, and look within. That you're saying that the publication itself may cease to be.
Of or relating to existence.
Yes, I know that. But
it's an adjective. It means they may have an existential problem. A problem.
Oh, they definitely have.
Of
personally,
or relating
those
to
people.
Their existence. You see this, folks? We went,
they definitely
we went
have
straight
a
in. The music hadn't even stopped. And full on, it is like
it's
we
very
it's like,
deep.
We got to start. We got to do this.
Meta.
Seems like old times.
Meta. It does. It does.
You know, Janine, you will be happy to know that on a weekly basis, I get an email, maybe a tweet, but generally an email saying, Sam, you're great, but these ahs and these ums, the stuttering, it has to end.
Well, I don't know that it can end. When you don't, you know, when you don't do it. When you're really sparring with someone on the phone, like who claims to be a libertarian or something, you don't do it when you're passionate about. But I loved also Pete showed me footage of you at that convention where you were on the dais having a phone conversation with a libertarian talking about he said, yeah, 15 employees. And you kept saying two. He's like, 15? Because you're a job killer, by the way. You used to have 15 employees. Now you only have two job killers.
In fact, not only am I a job killer, I didn't even fire those people. I killed them.
They ceased to be. But do you remember the phone call I'm talking about?
Which one is this? Is it the one where he said you've never run a restaurant or
yes,
something?
Yes, yes, yes. But your face, there's just this. Just the
that is one of the few calls like that that I have not enjoyed. That guy's called twice, and I found it so aggravating because he was so incomprehensible. So
Sam is oddly.
We had to explain to Sam the beauty of that conversation afterwards because he was
good.
Just so angry.
Sam is oddly like sincere about these debates, so well, he doesn't appreciate when someone's just completely incoherent.
Well, that person was also sincere in their incoherence. Oh, that's the problem.
And that was why it was such a great call.
They don't expect to be challenged in that way, and they probably are perceived in their circle to be the smartest person in the room because they will throw in phrases that sound quite intelligent to somebody who isn't. A lot of buzzwords, right. So he is not challenged because his peer group probably is frightened to say anything because they assume he knows what he's talking about.
Like tyranny and restaurant research analyst.
Yes, a word like tyranny in certain circles. Oh.
Tyranny and road two.
Treason or tyranny. Tyrannicide? Again with Brutus. What was it? It depends on your perspective. It all goes back to Rome. All of it. The model of the Roman Empire infected the British Empire's notion of imperialism, and it infected America's notions and Australia because of the.
How long have you been reading about Rome? Going back to college?
I actually have always been very interested in Rome. And then years ago, there was an HBO series called Rome.
That
I loved more than anything. And then anytime I come across a book about Rome, I will get it. And the latest one I just got at the Strand yesterday was about the rise and fall of Rome. But I also just finished rereading Caesar's Diaries. They were finished posthumously, for obvious reasons.
Because he had I'll get back to this later, and then. March.
He would have said it in either Latin, Greek, or the Roman tongue.
Right. I mean, he writes in, I'll get back to this at the end of March when I have
hope
a break.
Hope no one puts a knife under their toga. Because knives in the
I'll
Senate
obviously
house
be
forbidden.
Safe in the Senate, clearly. Right. So I'll just set this aside.
The conspirators, but that begs the question. Tyrannicide or treason? Did they kill a dictator or a reformer? I say reformer.
Really?
The history of Julius Caesar is actually many other people have posited that over the years. He is not the dictator that he is made to be. He was a guy who was disliked by the powerful because he was very popular with the quote-unquote plebs.
Hold on.
Well, that's sticking. But we interviewed, was it Michael Ferenti, somebody who wrote a book?
Michael Parenti,
The Assassination of Julius Caesar. In the old show, we interviewed him, and he was he first got me thinking about that.
Did we? I don't remember that interview. And maybe I wasn't there.
No, you were there, but you barely remember that in that phone call, that guy kept saying you have 15 employees. That was moments ago.
Yeah, it really wasn't that long ago. You know, we are coming up, Janine.
On the puppy ball? What?
No, it is, we are actually to the day, 2 months away from our 10-year anniversary.
Oh, my God.
Of when we lost that show. All right, let me go back to what my joke was.
That's got to stop stuttering. See, that thing has to stop stuttering. It's a real problem.
I got to reset this thing. I was going to do the breaking news, Janine Garofalo, pro Caesar.
Well, actually, lots of people are pro Caesar, but a lot of our understanding of Caesar comes from William Shakespeare, which he did not say et tu Brute, which I may have discussed with you before. But
wait, what did he say?
It's something less.
More like, oh, come on.
No, well,
Brute.
It was sort of like that. It was, and he said it in Greek, but he said, you too, because Brutus may or may not have been his illegitimate son.
I didn't know any of this.
And, Caesar had been having an affair with Brutus's mother for 20 years, among other women, but he said a less elegant thing in
Greek. Oh, F you, Brute.
But it was so Shakespeare took
Brute.
took liberties. But also our understanding of, like, the House of York and the War of the Roses is shaped by Shakespeare, not really historical fact.
Have you read The Trial of Socrates by I.F. Stone?
I have not.
Because I think that seems like, when I didn't read the Parenti book, but that book is a reworking of Socrates. And the idea of that book is that Socrates was basically leading, like, this almost, like, fascist elite insurgency against mm-hmm. democratic Athens. And, right. like, they were right to put him on trial,
oh
essentially.
My God,
right. So it's another one of these revisionist things.
Well, yeah, it depends on who's
strutting
writing
around
these
here
stories.
Like a peacock. No.
But there, in Rome, actually, took Parenti's view of, which was also very, very interesting to me. And in his own diaries, there is things that he's doing, and then he has notes from meetings where people like Cicero and other orators would get up and say, you can't lower the taxes on the plebs. You can't allow them to have more freedom and to have a voice in the Senate and stuff like that. That's a lot of why he was killed. And he actually shunned being given the title of dictator, which they said, or he could sit for life. He was offered that option. He said no.
Mm.
So,
well, it's true.
What song is that? That's not coming.
Oh my
out.
God!
Well, either way, Sam. Congratulations again
news.
On the potty. I can so while you're trying to fix that, let's talk about the puppy bowl.
Yeah.
I don't know if anyone can see this. This was my VIP pass to go to a
pregame. What are you doing? Are you taking a picture of that?
Yeah, he's taking a picture, and
this
I'm
will
showing.
Go on the Facebook
page. So wait a second. You're going on.
Like. No.
You're going to the puppy bowl.
No. The puppy bowl, I'm not going to. They actually shoot it in October, air it on Super Bowl Sunday on Animal Planet. What I did go to was a live pregame event at the Discovery Store in Times Square, excuse me, on Tuesday night, where you can see the fake football field with a batch of puppies. And if anybody watched Colbert last night, he also showed it. He went to the Discovery Store and shot footage of that football field with the puppies. But so I went to this event.
But he got to do something that...
My dream. Okay, if I can backtrack.
Please.
They also had an adoption. You could adopt from the ASPCA.
Did you adopt another puppy?
No. And believe me, it's tempting. But my dog just had major surgery. So it's got a lot of stitches. There's no way we could have introduced another pup in. Or a new pup in there.
A new puppy, right.
With all those stitches. But be that as it may. My dream has been for years. Anyone who knows me knows this. That I've wanted to be the ref at the Puppy Bowl. This is Puppy Bowl 10 coming up. So for the last 10 years, 9 years before this, I have them all on DVD, by the way. I have always said, how do you get that job? Because it's been the same guy. Now, I met the ref, nice guy. I'm not begrudging him anything. I don't want to take his job. I'd be willing to do anything surrounding the
Puppy Bowl. I'm not convinced that if you didn't sort of say his name, that there might be a fan out there who might make sure that guy is
No. I want him to. He's a great guy, and we actually are doing a podcast together coming up. But
wait, what?
He and I coincidentally are on Emily Heller's podcast is coming up. But anyway, so I met the person who is in charge of the Puppy Bowl at this event, and I begged and pleaded, Sam, it's okay. We don't need to have the...
I want the sound.
Just unplug it completely and then plug it back in. Stop trying... There we go. Jeez, like I'm dealing with two Michaels here.
That didn't work. Okay.
All right, so anyway, long story longer. So I met the person who's in charge of the Puppy Bowl, begged them to participate next October. They said that possibly could happen. In the meantime, I may be working on a show called Too Cute on Animal Planet, where they just show footage of unbelievably cute baby animals.
Now,
wow,
and I
that
get
is
to comment
breaking...
on it.
Not to in any way jeopardize that, but I saw some article, I forget where, maybe it was Salon, about one of these Animal Planet shows kind of like abusing animals on set, basically. Did
what?
You see that?
Yes.
No,
yes,
I didn't.
Call the Wild, that turtle, the show with that guy Turtle Man or whatever.
Uh-huh.
Apparently obviously it's all set up, but apparently they pay trappers to trap these animals in advance. Then they hold them until production. And then after they shoot the show, then they take them to the shelter or whatever and say, we found these animals.
You've just rained on my parade to a degree. Hopefully now that has been brought out in the open, they will change that. But unfortunately.
It was just about that one show, nothing else.
But the thing is anytime animals are working, regardless of the medium, film, television, what have you, it is not ideal. I've noticed that over the years. And that disclaimer that's always put at the end, like no animals, that is just a thing like executive producer, like all those titles.
There was a recent story about that, actually. Yeah.
Who is that group that does that? Is that just
the Humane Society or the ASPCA?
Oh, that's who does the. Yeah.
Well, no, there's different animal handlers and wranglers for any production.
No, but I'm saying the group that signs off on.
I think it's just a. I don't even know.
It could even be like an industry group.
Yeah,
like
it could be an industry group. See. But I have not seen overt cruelty with the dogs and cats. I have worked with in a couple of different productions. But put it this way, they are not enjoying the long hours. Being commanded to do things over and over again, being denied any playtime, that kind of thing. And I have always tried to the point of where I have to break down crying to get anyone to actually to say, okay, because you, saying something doesn't do anything. And then, of course, when I start crying because it actually gets some people to go, okay. But boy, then you're like, she's so difficult.
She's so difficult to work with.
So crazy.
Why won't she let us torture the dog?
I know it's not
the problem with Garofalo?
And unfortunately, it's a money making venture for these animal wranglers and handlers. These people, it's like a person whose parent is their manager. You know what I mean?
Right.
Making a child be the breadwinner.
Doctors
for the
family. On a football team.
They're making these animals be the breadwinner for them, and so they're taking animals and making them do things that is not. And denying them all chance of joy and fun. And then when these animals breed, they take the babies and start again and start making the babies work, you know. And it's a terrible thing. And there are a lot of groups that are trying to do stuff about it. But it is virtually impossible to get directors and producers and money people that concerned on the day, especially when they're shooting and they're losing the light or
right.
that kind of thing. We only have 19 days to get this and we're already behind. That is the least likely group to say, you know what, let's take a break. And
it's not as easy as it is with babies who are on set.
Because
you can just get twins. You just get a couple of babies that look alike.
Well, they sometimes do have dogs that look alike. But the thing is, some are better than others at doing what they're supposed to do. But here's another thing. Stop making the dog do stupid cutesy stuff. Just, you know, if you want a dog in the scene, let it be a dog. You don't need to have it go, ooh, like reacting to a comment, a dumb joke that somebody makes. You know what I'm talking about? Where they make the dog react to a dumb joke or a situation. That's what that needs to stop happening.
It's uncomfortable, but we've actually sort of done that with Saul just a little bit. We have...
Mm-hmm.
We have
forced him to react like ooh, and then do
well.
The
we go like it's nighty night, and then he goes like this.
Yeah.
And maybe we'll lay off that a little bit.
You withhold his formula.
That's right. Uh-huh. Although it's making it's you know we're going to probably put him on YouTube, and that we can monetize
right.
that. So.
Yeah, as long as it can be monetized for your children, it makes it worthwhile because children are very expensive, and also we're going to be underwater in about 4 years, and if they're not strong swimmers. That's another problem. So they might as well be earners until that time, unless you live in that libertarian structure in the sea. Are you going?
What's that?
To that libertarian structure in the sea? That
which one is that? That's not what is the name of that thing?
I can't. Is it? It's like utopian society.
That's the Peter Thiel thing,
right? Is didn't we have
I don't
somebody?
Remember
oh,
the name
the Seasteading
that.
Institute.
Seasteading Institute.
Yeah, where people will have pretend to read the Fountainhead, and. Discuss how delightful it is to see the have-nots drowning afore their eyes.
Saying they've read The Fountainhead may be the only thing they're being honest about.
I disagree.
Yeah. Really?
I don't
okay.
believe they read the whole thing.
Well, that's a hard
Or Atlas
book
Shrugged.
Actually...
And I believe they don't really get into the details of objectivism, Ayn Rand's objectivism. They certainly are conveniently ignoring her atheism and other things because it doesn't suit them, like Paul Ryan.
Oh, yeah.
Stuff like that.
I'm sure Thiel probably doesn't have a problem being an
right.
atheist.
There are some of them are atheists. But, you know, speaking of libertarians, let's talk about...
Republican and Republicans?
Have either
well,
of you
let's
guys
talk
ever
about
finished
freedom.
An Ayn Rand book?
Freedom Industries. No.
Okay.
I don't think I have. I have finished her essays and writings about objectivism. I have made valiant efforts at Atlas Shrugged and The Fountainhead.
every part of what you just said is valiant.
To be fair, I did watch an entire YouTube of Milton Friedman talking about the Ford Pinto.
Now you just need to manage a Denny's and you'll have
that's right. And then I will be able to.
Wasn't there a libertarian Republican on the phone with you defending the Pinto at one point? Or was yes. that in an article saying
no, that's
best
true.
Call ever?
Yes, that was when they if said, people you know, knew. If people knew. Then it would just be cheaper. You could price it into the car.
Right. It is. You are free. You are free to be rear-ended in that car and have it explode.
Will you want to throw $100 off for me? You know, because it could incinerate my family. let's factor that in.
Yeah.
We will play this clip from The Daily Show with Peter Schiff, whose brother has been on this program. And was also famous, sort of went underground after that New York Times piece where he was complaining about how much money he makes. He only gets like $250 from his brother or something. It's just so hard to make it for this guy. But here's a clip of Peter Schiff. Now, Peter Schiff is a financial advisor whose business seems to have has been on the wane because apparently while he did predict the crash in 2008, after that reportedly his clients did not do so well. So he does a radio program. In fact, I went on the radio program for an hour with him or something.
You were on it once, yes.
Yeah, and this guy is pushing this notion of somehow the minimum wage. And the interesting thing about libertarians is, and you know, you mentioned those phone calls, libertarians refuse to acknowledge any empirical evidence that in any way. And I don't even know that whether or not it reinforces their argument or not. They just have a theory in their mind, and that's it, period. And it's in a vacuum. It doesn't exist in reality. And empiricism is simply not in any way an obstacle to their full-throated and never-ending belief in some notion. But here's Peter Schiff. At the tail end of a piece he did with Samantha Bee from The Daily Show.
That was great. That was really good.
Talking about the minimum wage. Now,
and the hypothetical 48-year-old that works at McDonald's.
Well, yes, there's all that. I mean, this guy went down to Walmart and was going around saying that if we increase prices by 15%, will you allow for...
He showed up pretending... to like showing himself as a Walmart worker holding a bucket saying, do you support $15 minimum wage for us?
Yes, and anyone who said that was going to increase prices by 15%, a total lie, but that's what he needed. And even then he could barely get the good video he wanted.
Yeah.
Here he is explaining to Samantha Bee about his notion of how we should have a free market in labor, no minimum wage, presumably no 40-hour work week, no weekends, no child labor laws, but here he is talking about you should get paid what you're worth.
As it turns out, the fast food industry alone costs taxpayers roughly $7 billion a year in public assistance to their employees. It's practically McWalmart's, sis. But for many, when it comes to our economy, it's our country's founding principles that matter.
If we eliminate the minimum wage law, then individuals would be free to accept jobs at whatever pay they're able to get.
Paint me a picture of a person whose work would be worth $2 an hour.
You know, somebody who might be. Maybe somebody who is, you know, what's the politically correct word, mentally retarded. What's the new...
Okay.
That's what I believe in the principles that the country was founded on.
But...
I'm not going to say that we're all... created equal. You're worth what you're worth.
You're worth what you're worth.
Just like our founding fathers said, you're worth what you're worth, and we're not all created equal.
So there's Peter Schiff talking about his libertarian utopia where we would have an entire workforce that was getting even sub non-living wage, a sort of a even
and it's mentally that. Challenged is the quote-unquote politically correct word he's looking for. And of course he says politically correct with disdain, like all Republicans, conservatives and fake libertarians do, because they can't stand that you need to be respectful and mannerly to.
Well, what's really funny is that he's sensitive about using that word mentally retarded, but the idea that we would just pay them $2 yeah. or the idea that, you know, look, we have people starving in the streets. What's the big
what's
deal?
What's the appropriate term for, you know, mentally challenged people that I want to ruthlessly exploit and grind into the ground with slave wages? I'm trying to figure that out.
There is, in the latest Nation that I have from February 10th, which you may know, there is a book review of the story of Death Foretold, the coup against Salvador Allende, September 11th, 1973. And there was a couple things in this that the author, Oscar Guardiola Rivera, who wrote it, talks about the mindset that precipitated the coup with the, you know, the CIA.
That's right.
And
Kissinger's 13.
Henry Kissinger's.
Yeah.
And with help from religious zealots in Chile and in Brazil. But he talks about that the Pinochet election, the Pinochet dictatorship after Allende's election, in conjunction with U.S., you know, the conservatism of the U.S., or the
Milton
hawkishness.
Milton Friedman, I think, actually went down there, if I remember correctly.
That some people call neoliberalism, but I do not. Produce the norms that govern the world today. And it says that it's a philosophical idea combined with historical events. And it says that there's an assumption by the powerful that creative working class intellectuals do not exist. That's not a thing that when they vote for things that they don't like, or what this man was saying, you're worth what you're worth. He's assuming there's no such thing as a creative poor person or an intellectual poor person. He probably thinks
there's no value
all,
to them except yes. for the fact that they could get a $2 job.
Right.
Period.
And he said, so they're saying that they have no belief that creative working class intellectuals exist, even though they divide the world into two sorts of people, themselves and the rest. And that justifies economic inequality by pointing to the alleged infantile barbarism of the powerless. And then it says that. And hence exploitable, as Henry Kissinger's ideas about people were. And then he even is quoted as saying, history never has and never will occur in the South, meaning the South Americas. Saying that's how little I think of these people. So I can create and move like a chessboard because they won't make history.
Right. By history, they're not talking about – right, exactly. They're not talking about time proceeding, just that nothing that will happen down there will have any influence on the future of the world.
And right.
So that it will not be recalled in any real way. I mean, it's sort of the mirror or the – image of Howard Zinn's notion of people's history, that the idea that actually, you know, human beings actually matter, even if they're not king. And
right.
I mean, the libertarian philosophy essentially is survival of the richest, I guess, is really what it comes down to. It doesn't matter how you get there.
It's arrogant. And there is even people who are victimized by the very system they're supporting, which is the nature of Republicanism is... the cynics and the suckers, you know what I mean? They're constantly voting against their own interests, but be that as it may, it is an arrogance that's justified. And you were talking about it happens in a vacuum. It has to. And nothing good happens in a vacuum, right? Aerospace.
I mean, vacuum.
Mining. Your Spanx.
Vacuums.
There's nothing good.
Vacuums are good. But
vacuums are good, but
yes,
a vacuum.
Right, if you don't want to be inside one.
But you have to be in denial, right? You have to. It's the same with any cult or any religious orthodoxy or any orthodoxy of any kind, economic, social, religious, what have you. You must deny externalities.
Definitely.
You must deny empathy in a way and have such a sense of short-sightedness that always serves your purposes. And you can't. You can't have challenges to it. And then there's a great article in Rolling Stone about IHOP, the International House of Prayer, which is a real thing. It's one of the largest Christian movements happening, the New Apostolic Reformation movement. And it's actually called the International House of Prayer, this thing. But and they're very anti-gay, and they also have a idea of exclusionary politics, that they are somehow better. These types of Christians are somehow better. And, of course, there's tons of closeted guys in it and all kinds of stuff.
All of what you just reminded me. Yesterday on the program, we had Austin Ruse from CFAM. What was that? The Catholic Family Human...
Catholic Families and Human Rights Institute?
Something to that effect.
I'll double check.
And that's a frightening name, but was he a good guy?
He wasn't a good Catholic.
I hear families or values or heritage or tradition or Americans... in the title of anything, I know that
if it was
the
Catholic Institute, that might be a good thing.
There we go.
Woo!
Austin, we had done a video about a piece he had done on radio about the horrors of DVRing a Food Channel show called Chopped.
Chopped,
watching it
right.
back.
Oh, it's
with
brutal
his daughter.
On Chopped. It is cutthroat. I mean, have you seen some of those dishes? Sloppy. Sloppy. And then they try and say, I'm so sorry, but my wife is dying of... They always do that, like when they're about to get criticized for their dish.
Well, that was part of the problem, was that it turned out one of the contestants' wife was a woman. And she was a woman.
Oh, there's a lot of LGBT chefs on Chopped.
Well... He had to shield his 8-year-old daughter.
How can he explain it to her? How can he explain to her?
He doesn't want to, because he doesn't want to normalize it. It took about 40 minutes for him to just really admit that this is not really a question about marriage is going to threaten marriage or whatever it is, just that he has a moral problem with gay people. And what I didn't do, and I offer this as an apology to our listeners. We didn't really do any research on CFAM. The only reason why we had him on was because he was on Twitter saying, how could you do this? Say this.
Did you need
me?
To research it to have to know
what
where
I
this
didn't realize?
We didn't realize it was this bad.
No, I didn't realize it was this bad. I didn't realize that he had flown to Moscow to praise the Russian anti-gay laws there.
Somebody's a closeted. You know, if you're that against it, where there's smoke, there's fire. But by the way, anybody who is going to have a problem with Chopped and bringing in the old chestnut of how do I explain this to my child, do the research, that's fine. But you know that there is so much more going on.
I believe that he is, there's a white-knuckled quality to this. And I think, by his own argument, it is perfectly, it is to be expected by the nature of his argument that there will be men out there who are denying their feelings, mm-hmm. And leading by all outward, from what we can tell, would be a heterosexual life. He feels it's a choice. He may have those feelings or may not. I don't know.
Well, he's definitely got some feelings besides being terribly anti-intellectual in this area and panicked and petty.
It's incredibly
petty. That's probably
petty.
His personality type. And also, it probably has to see with the Neanderthal genetics. Some have more than others. there was intermingling sexual encounters between Neanderthals.
Yeah.
And I guess hominids are more advanced. I could be wrong about that. But as we were evolving, some were a bit more behind. I don't know what the politically correct word is for a
people who get $2
an regressive,
hour.
A Neanderthal that would get $2 an hour.
Right.
Let's say.
Of course.
Let's put it that way. He's worth what he's worth.
Right. Just of spit. Course.
But I have read about this before, that there is evidence to support that in nature, some things hang on a little bit longer than others. And in some pockets of the world, there were Neanderthals that weren't as advanced as other pockets of the world. And there was some intermingling between more advanced and less advanced.
Yes. And also,
that lives on.
We were on
people.
Different evolutionary roads at that point. We had split off from the Neanderthals. They were really more like our cousins, I guess you could say.
Well, I feel like some people, I'm being sincere when I say this. I am not joking around. I believe that there is, in the genetic coding of some, a more regressive tendency. Nature and nurture is both. They are neurologically wired a certain way. But anybody who is like the Koch brothers or Michelle Bachmann or, anywhere in the world, people who stand against inclusiveness or social evolution or fairness or tolerance, any of these things, and then make a career of it. Or down to the neighborhood bully.
You're saying they're being run It's predetermined that their DNA is forcing them to be regressive.
I feel like
they
want
to go back to the caveman thing.
Now, I believe that there is some case to be made for some neurological wiring issues in a person who is so seemingly a sociopath. They aren't, maybe, but they seem to be. Now, like the Koch brothers. Now, they probably are intelligent. They're not emotionally intelligent, but they probably are bright guys. And I don't believe for a second they are down with this social nonsense. They're willing to use
course,
it. They'll
absolutely.
Ride that train.
Absolutely.
But I have a feeling the Koch brothers...
on record is saying he supports marriage equality.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure.
Yeah.
Just, much like Dick Cheney. Totally. As long as the money's green, that's the number one issue, right? And the thing is they're willing to play that card of intolerance. To use those people because it suits them, but their issue is different. Their cruelty, so whatever's wrong with them, I don't know that it's more Neanderthal. Then there's some people that are so anti-intellect. Michelle Bachmann, just as one example, there's plenty of others, and even people outside of politics, just in your the neighborhood bully who is.
Oh, you're talking about Adam Carolla.
As a type. Right. But I'm saying in anyone's hometown or anything like that, there is a strain of Neanderthal genetics in them that I think is stronger.
Oh, you're definitely talking about Adam Carolla.
Are you taking issue? Did he say something about you? Because Greg Barrett was very upset recently about something Adam Carolla said.
Adam Carolla is just one of those guys who, to me, sort of epitomizes what you're talking about. He's just sort of like casually moronic about politics, but doesn't. The idea that he doesn't know anything of what he's talking about does in no way make him hesitate to talk about those things.
But he has no access to "quote unquote" seats of power, and I doubt that he would push it. That
he's got a platform where he talks to
people that are like-minded. I actually have not heard his podcast or whatever you're talking about. I'm assuming that he, just by judging from some of the humor that I have seen.
I'm not even talking about his humor. I mean, occasionally he'll just sort of wade into sort of libertarian arguments.
Oh, okay.
Those type of like sort of casual, you know, common sense. It's all about common sense.
Right. Well, that's just an easier way to live for him. It's just easier way to live. There are a number of
male
Greg comics
Barron's
who have
upset
that.
About?
I guess Adam Carolla said a very nasty, unkind thing about him in general. You know, in general.
Okay.
And so I thought maybe you were.
No, I don't. You know, I don't take
the worst part
to
about Adam,
personal attacks.
The worst part about Adam Carolla
is that
he's not knowledgeable enough about anything, so he never wants to engage in any debate. He just says what he says, and then he just.
But that's the nature of a lot of those people.
When I bring him up, I'm just goading.
He's not funny.
When I bring him up, I'm just goading him. That's it. I mean, I don't even have a specific complaint, but I'm just goading him.
But I doubt he would go to the mat to harass people. I doubt he would move towards
his whole family could be forced to sit down and see me goading him, and he still wouldn't do it because he knows that he couldn't justify or explain any of his political positions, mm-hmm. so he would never engage. So there's nothing I could do to goad him enough. But, you know,
but
you
did try right there.
what I'm also saying is he probably wouldn't go into society to stand in the way of somebody. You know what I mean? Like, he's not going to block a gay marriage I don't know if he would block a gay marriage, but
he goes on. He goes on Fox occasionally.
I don't picture him getting active himself, but I could certainly picture him throwing money to an organization that would do it for him.
Oh, I actually doubt he would want to part with his money.
Really?
I don't think he would part with
his money.
There's too many
towards anything.
There's too many built-in
like
kegerators to buy.
No, I feel like he actually wouldn't throw money behind it either. I am not denying or invalidating what you guys are saying, and I am sure he says conveniently unkind things that are
right, but he's
pretend
not
political.
It's just casual.
Platforms.
It's just casual. But I find that.
Well, he may have more Neanderthal genetics. Either way, somebody I'm sure will tell him that he's being called out or something. Whatever, you know, the way the nonsense goes through the web. So maybe you will get your wish that.
Oh, one can only hope. Now, we're going to have to take a break in a minute, but I want to get to this story because this got me so angry today. It's been getting me increasingly angry, but we've been talking about libertarians and their utopia where there would be no government regulation, of course. You cannot in any way preclude the profit-making incentive or impetus in society. And there's a new report that – or not I should report, but in testimony yesterday, a West Virginia state official. Now, we know – that Freedom Industries had this warehouse where they were warehousing all sorts of chemicals. And we know that they spilled, according to them initially, 7,000 gallons or so of a chemical called crude MCHM. There's been very little research on this in terms of its toxicity, although it's clearly toxic in some way. It turns out that on Monday that it became clear that, in fact, not just 7,000 gallons were spilled. This is a coal cleaning chemical into the Elk River, but in fact, 10,000 gallons of it. And it also said a second chemical, PPH, was also involved in that. Now, as of yesterday, testimony given in front of a legislative panel in West Virginia, a Scott Simonton, a Marshall University environmental scientist and a member of the State Environmental Quality Board, said that he can guarantee residents in West Virginia are breathing in formaldehyde, which is a known carcinogen, a horrible carcinogen. And they are still doing it nearly 3 weeks after that chemical spill. It's frightening. It really is frightening, Simonton said. We know what scares us, and we know there's a lot more we don't know. What we know scares us. We know there's a lot more what we don't know. This is just unbelievable. There's no recourse here for West Virginian citizens. Freedom Industries is, of course, they declared bankruptcy. They have probably shuttled all their assets to another shell company, and they may or may not have some financial payment to make. But that's not going to make up for the future cancers, for the future birth defects, for the future health problems, for just the idea that we can't drink our clean water anymore. There is no recourse here. This is why we need, and West Virginia is a cesspool of lack of regulation. All the politicians there, Democrats, Republicans, have been bought out by the coal industry. It doesn't really matter. And we need more stringent federal regulations for this reasons. And it's just, these guys should be in prison. They should be in prison to send a message to the next Freedom Industries that says, you know, if we can actually save a couple of dollars here, let's forget our own quality control on where we're storing these horribly toxic chemicals.
Well, it's not unlike other companies are doing it. And like when the Exxon Valdez and that spills, they don't have to really clean it up. They don't have to really clean up. Don't have to really pay the fines. Or BP, I'm sure, has not had to live up to their responsibilities.
Or it's just the cost of doing business.
Yep.
It's like, you know, we've got to buy a new steel factory. We also got to pay, you know, 0.3% of our profits for that year, and that's just the cost of doing business. Big deal. But all right, we're going to take a break, Janine. When we come back,
yeah,
we're going to talk about this story about the National Review, which is a fun story. I think you'll enjoy
it. Okay, and also I'd like to talk about Art Pope, who pretends he's a libertarian conservative guy.
This is the guy from North Carolina.
He wants more regulation for one thing, ladies' bodies, gerrymandering, voter suppression, but less regulation for everything else. Woo! Gomer Pyle, Jim Neighbors, gay. Who has a problem with that? Who's got a problem with that? Somebody has a problem with Jim Neighbors, you're going to tell me that this guy from the Catholic families, how is he going to tell his daughter that Gomer Pyle? Am I going to explain to my 8-year-old daughter that Gomer Pyle, who was friends with Andy Griffith, he crossed over on shows, was also, I think, on Sergeant Bilko. How am I going to tell my daughter about shows that she probably can't even watch even on Nick at Night anymore?
You can get one of those, like, I think you can buy
You can watch Cozy. That's a new
watch
channel.
It on Crackle or something like that on your Roku device.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to take your phone calls. 646-257-3920 is the number. 646-257-3920 is the number. You can, of course, IM us. Folks, we rely on your support to maintain this program and ultimately grow it. We were just talking about the other day, like, how nice would it be to have a studio where we could have a legitimate backdrop for our video and one where we could have actually legitimate heat coming in? We have two settings of heat in this office. One is it's not working. And then two is it heats up by pouring out some type of noxious gas. So there are times, I mean, I think on YouTube, maybe you've noticed this. There are times I'm going to Matt in the middle of saying something. I'm going, turn up heat, because I can't, literally can't speak because my throat is seizing up because of whatever comes out of or whatever's burning off on this radiator. So someday in the future, we're going to hopefully move to a studio that is a little better shape. But the only way we can do this, improve the show, is by your support. And as a bonus, what we do is we give you an extra 50 minutes. So, for instance, we're going to be talking to Janine afterwards, mm-hmm. and that's going to be a bonus for
us. Wow, that is a real treat for the listeners. Also, I would like to you could do a Kickstarter program.
We may do a Kickstarter. Look at Janine.
I hear the kids are into Kickstarter, which maybe we could do for the people in West Virginia.
Probably Indiegogo.
They could, you know, since the corporations won't do it.
That's right. We'll do a Kickstarter,
for
some way of preventing companies from poisoning the water supply.
But isn't that actually a viable thing you could people could do is these Kickstarter things to help these people where the companies and the government fails to do so.
Yeah, but I think ultimately, and I'm not, I don't want to.
Because we don't need another indie film.
We need government action. Mm-hmm. We need public policy to address these issues. It's the only way to address them in any type of meaningful or sustained mm-hmm. way. So, you know, these public-private partnerships, the philanthropy that. You know, President Obama had talked about where our pre-K, we can have pre-K in this country as long as we do it by the good graces of the very wealthiest people
in the
country.
I'd like to call on companies to dump us formaldehyde voluntarily.
It was painful watching that State of the Union, the parsing of words.
We can talk about it.
And the word, saying working together. And
calling CEOs to not dump formaldehyde. You don't need to do it.
Voluntarily.
By the good graces of the millionaires and the billionaires.
There's no reason why we can't keep the Elk River clean.
I respectfully
submit that request to you.
Folks.
The website was bad. That's on me.
Folks, you can also support this program if you buy crap from Amazon. Which I don't necessarily suggest that you do that. Amazon practices are not necessarily the best when it comes to labor. But if you buy crap from Amazon, you want the convenience, buy it through our link at majorityreportkickback.com. Go there, click on the link, bookmark it. At the very least, you will be supporting this program with small kickbacks from Amazon. On your purchases, you will notice no difference, but it will make a smile more. Also, justcoffee.coop, full-throated endorsement of that company. It is a fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate, employee-owned, coupon code majority, get 10% off, or you can get a majority FM button. Do you drink coffee?
Not as much as I used to. Now I enjoy this more in the morning.
47-ounce can of Red Bull.
Tea lattes. I've been getting into tea lattes.
Well, I think they have tea.
Okay.
That's
you'd
awesome.
Have to go
you see
online
the bases
to buy
that Janine's
them.
Covering there, though? She's like, Red Bull? Also a tea latte.
I like a tea latte. I like tea with well. With a Scottish breakfast tea with frothed soy milk is a particular... thing
that is sure. All bases are covered.
Wow, there. Is right.
All right. Folks, you
coffee
can also
bean and tea leaf.
Get the app, the Majority Report app. It's free. People listen to the show live on the thing. They download podcasts. You can now. We should be clear on the app. You can stream a podcast, which eats up none of your hard drive space on your phone, Or if you're going into the subway, or you're taking a train, or you're going on an airplane, or whatever it is. I mean, I guess you can download
it. Riding a foot cycle?
You can download it by pressing on the downward arrow that is embedded on the line that describes the podcast, and then you'll see a progress bar scrolling. You can also reach any of the links that we talk about on this show, from majorityreportkickback.com to Just Coffee. You can leave a review on iTunes. All different things you can do on the app. You can watch YouTube clips, and you can share the show on Twitter or on Facebook. So get the app today, majorityapp.com.
You can help the Majority Report climb the ladders of opportunity.
There you go. That's right.
That was wonderful.
I'm not getting in there.
Do you got Howard Cosell? You do Howard Cosell?
Who's Howard Cosell?
Ask Seriously? Your dad. Ask
Wait,
your
I don't know. The sportscaster.
Yeah. I don't know.
I just
don't
have to feel like giving you a heart attack.
646-257-3920. We are celebrating our 9-year and 10-month anniversary today. On the program, Janine and I are.
I could see Obama calling out a podcast. It wouldn't be a liberal one, though. It would be like, there's a small podcast in Texas that says I was born in Kenya every day. No, I disagree with that.
My favorite
this
podcast.
Is a small business.
We can, and they can
Ezra Klein's got a
great work together
to create opportunity to find that birth certificate.
I really enjoy that podcast hosted by Iglesias and Klein. I could picture Obama joining and all.
All right, folks. 646-257-3920. We'll be right back after this.